When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio State has gone all in on the transfer portal and championship pursuit under Ryan Day. But what are the expectations, real or otherwise, in Columbus? We'll talk about that tonight. Jim Harbaugh is off to the NFL. We talk about what that means for Michigan. Plus, we've got report cards for the entire Big 12 tonight. Who excelled, who passed, and who's repeating 13th grade? All of that and more right here on the Three Technique.
One man. Goodbye. Hello, Heisman.
20, 25, 30, 35,
40, 45, 50,
45. There goes
Davis. Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
They give it back now to the 30. They're down to the 20. All the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
Four-man Alabama rush. Got him. No, they didn't. Oh, my God.
How about that? Welcome in, everybody, to another off-season edition of the Three Technique College Football Podcast at the intersection of the X's and O's and the Jimmies and the Joes. I'm Mitch Mason, joined by Trey Reeves, Garrett Turney. Fellas, good to be back with you. Had a little bit of a bug last week after a business trip, but tell you what, based on the results from some of the fan bases that you guys talked about, y'all did a great job. The Twitter profile is popping off right now. Posted a couple of the clips from your podcast over there, and the analysis I just thought was really, really sound. So great job,
man. I don't know if we inspired a lot of fan bases that we talked about, but we certainly riled up the rivals of those fan bases and gave them some bulletin board material to pass around. So, you know, whatever it takes to get some more clicks and make sure that we're getting people talking, that's great.
Yeah, screw you, Miami. No, I'm just kidding. That was kind of the one that went a little bit more of a, it popped a little more on Twitter, but you know, look,
Miami did not get a kind treatment from us.
They did not get a kind treatment. And look, we're going to be, you know, we're not hot takes artists, but if we have a hot take, we'll say it. We're not going to come out here and just say, oh, I'm going to, you know, pretend to be moderate on everything when actually I feel certain ways about stuff. Like, no, if we think something, we're going to say it. We're not just going to torch you to torch you, but, you know, we're going to say what we think. And there's programs that each of us have built reputations for that we might be walking back. And I know I'm speaking for myself. I might be walking some of it back tonight on the podcast with, you know, certain expectations for a team that I've been trashing since day one. So, you know, it's going to be fun, to go through this off season and, you know, see how that interaction goes. But, you know, look, that's the way it is in college football. We can't just be nice to everybody's team every week.
Well, listen, we call it like we see it. Right. And you're right. Like, we will admit when we got things wrong. You know, in the case of Miami, not so much, happy to be proven wrong, but you know, I think you guys made a lot of valid points on that. If you haven't seen that show, of course, head on over to the YouTube channel and you can watch that clip. What's wrong at Miami, I believe was the title for that one. Speaking of the YouTube channel, thank you for all the continued support. We continue to grow on all of our platforms, Instagram, Twitter, X, and on YouTube. You can find us at 3TechPod if this is your first time finding the show. We'd love to have you join the Jimmies and the Joes and continue discussion all across the platforms. Again, we love talking ball with you. You can hear us once a week on Monday mornings right here on YouTube, on Spotify, and on Apple Podcasts, but also on the social media throughout the rest of the week as we post our clips. Garrett, before we get to the question of the day, have to shout out our sponsors, of course, Transfer Portal CFB, continued home of the 3TechPod. We really appreciate their support and all the support that they've given us through this first season with them. We also have to shout out homefieldapparel.com, the good brand, continuing to create awesome merch and gear with the best retro logos in the industry. over on their website at Homefield Apparel is where you can find them. You can use code 3TECHPOD for 15% off, or you can head on over to our social profiles. You'll find our link tree there, and there is a custom code for you to shop through there. Helps support the show, helps keep us paying the bills and loving the good brand. So Homefield Apparel for all of your college needs. Garrett, with that, you mentioned there's a certain fan base that we're going to be talking a lot about tonight. And a lot of that having to do with the news, the transfer portal additions that one Ohio State has claimed over the last couple of days and weeks. It's been a tremendous offseason for Ohio State. But the question that we want to ask to the viewers centers really around their head coach.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at Ryan Day and kind of the expectations that we have for him, the hard thing is it's been kind of an up and down tenure, right? He's had a lot of success, but feels like he hasn't quite broken through to the very top. And so when you're thinking about success for Ryan Day in 2024, when you ask me, I think the unfortunate thing is the end result for that probably means he has to play for a national championship, right? He has to be coaching in the national championship game. If he's not there, then something went wrong along the way that prevented that, right? I think number one, he's got to beat Michigan. You cannot lose to Michigan for a fourth straight year. And again, the last time they did beat Michigan was in 2019. So it's been a long time since their fans have been able to say that that's happened. And so he's got to beat Michigan, but he's also got to beat some of those top teams along the way, right? He's got to be able to beat some top teams, got to be able to run through a playoff. I know it's going to be a 12-team playoff, so I don't doubt that they'll be able to get in, but seeding is going to be important, getting to if it's a hosting a game, if he doesn't quite make that top group, or if he is in that top group, being able to run through whoever makes it through. If there's a hot breaking team at the very end of the season, finding his way through that to a championship game, I think he's got to get to that point in order for the Buckeyes to call this success, especially with the investment they've made in the program.
Yeah. Are we talking successful from the point of view of like an objective neutral college football fan or success from the point of view of a Buckeyes fan? Because I think those are two very different things. I don't think the Buckeye fan base is going to be satisfied with Ryan Day until he actually wins the national championship.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why it's the question of the day, right? Because you've got a sliding scale of success.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for a program like Ohio State, it makes sense for their standards to be high. But when you look at Ryan Day just in a vacuum, the man, since he took over full time in 2019, has lost 8 football games, right? 3 of those are to Michigan. I think 2 of those are in the college football playoff. So 3 other regular season losses for Ryan Day. Like that's just insane to think about. That's a successful coach in any circumstance, maybe other than Ohio State and a couple other programs in the entire country. If you're not Ohio State or those other programs, you are just over the moon excited with those results. But I understand why Ohio State fans have a higher standard. They've had one of the best programs of all time, right? And they've had sustained success throughout most of their history. So it makes sense that they have that high standard. But I think, you know, they want to be a top 4 seed. They're going to have to win the Big Ten. That's the new format. So winning the Big Ten is going to mean beating Michigan at least once, maybe twice, right? They have to be in the new format of the Big Ten. There's no more divisions, so they don't get to just win the West or East and then beat up on some random team from the West next year. They're going to have to most likely beat Michigan at least twice to win a national championship or be set up to win a national championship. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out. From an objective standpoint, he's a very successful coach, but from an Ohio State fan standpoint, correct me if I'm wrong, Buckeyes fans, but I feel like you guys are never going to be sold on him until maybe he wins multiple championships. Honestly, I don't even know if one at this point would completely flip the tide, especially if it was like a fluky, almost lost the game, but somehow found a way to win game.
You know, I've asked this question a number of times over on Twitter, you know, is Ryan Day on the hot seat? Trying to get the pulse of the Buckeye fan base, and it is insane. Trey, as you mentioned, the stats, the numbers, the records, all of the success that he's had, but the one thing that he hasn't done is win a national championship for the Buckeyes, right? And Ohio State is such a blue-blooded program that it's almost grass is greener syndrome, right? Everything else kind of pales in comparison to winning that prize. Even when they were beating Michigan and winning Big Ten titles, if they weren't winning the national championship, there were still those rumblings, right? So, you know, we're going to talk more about Ohio State coming up in the next segment. Trey's going to lead us kind of through those expectations, what they should be realistically. We'll look at their roster, some of the guys that they've got coming back, some of the coaching staff that we're really confident in. So stay tuned for Ohio State. But Garrett, you're rounding out this first segment with that team up north. Trey mentioned you've got to beat Michigan at least a couple of times. And maybe that's true. Maybe that's not. Jim Harbaugh's headed to the NFL. Where do you see Michigan going here as Harbaugh goes to the Los Angeles Chargers?
Well, first off, we'll call them Michigan, not the team up north. Let's be respectful. Okay, let's be respectful of our current national champions. Okay, they're the reigning national champions for a reason. And look, this was a successful season for them. Obviously, 15-0 national championship, great. But one of the things that we even addressed when I did that, you know, victory lap with Teddy was, man, like this next year is about to be pretty tough, right? Because you have to think that Harbaugh might be leaving. Now we've confirmed that he is going off to the Chargers. You know, obviously Sharon Moore, kind of the insider, you know, main thought, he's probably going to be the guy that gets that chance, and well-deserved too, by the way. He did a great job in relief and you know, was able to lead some pretty impressive victories at the end of that season while Harbaugh was suspended. And I think he's going to be able to be successful going forward, but the dynamic has really changed around Michigan. Not only are you losing Harbaugh, you're also losing McCarthy. You're also going to be losing Corum. Right, you're losing Roman Wilson, you're losing playmakers across that team. They're going to have talent. There's still a talented roster, but that is young talent. That's inexperienced talent for a lot of it, right? And so you're going to have to watch that talent make a jump. But in addition to that, you have to consider the fact that everything else in the Big Ten is also occurring, right? First off, you're bringing in the other team that you just played in the national championship game. They got a good head coach as well. I know that DeBoer left, but Jed Fish is a good head coach up there at Washington. You're also bringing in who a lot of people are already considering a dark horse to make it this year in Oregon. And oh, by the way, Ohio State is stacking talent. We're going to talk about that in a second, but they're just stacking talent. I don't know how they got everybody to come back. I mean, everybody but Maserati Marv, it seems like, is coming back. And some of the departures, you know, I think are a little bit welcome in that Buckeye fan base. I know that not too many people were crying to see Kyle McCord walk out the door, and that's, you know, possibly not really fair. He was a fine quarterback. I just don't think special enough for what Buckeyes fans are expecting. Mm-hmm. But, man, like for Michigan right now, you have to balance all of that and say, look, we're losing the head football coach. So there's going to be some amount of change within the program. You're losing a lot of talent, so there's going to be some amount of, you know, regression in terms of on-field production and success, and the competition levels going way, way, way up and through the roof. I mean, if you look at Michigan's schedule next year, we did broke that down. They have Texas at home week two. They also play, I believe, USC, Oregon, and Washington out of that new group of people. And, oh, by the way, you still play Ohio State. That's five possible losses from very good football teams that I don't think Michigan loses all five of them. But we even talked about this on the pod with Teddy. 10-2 is a great season for Michigan next year. It just won't get it done, right? It just won't get it done in terms of that success. Now, all of that being said, I want to wrap that whole thought up with this. Better to have a championship banner hanging when all of this is going on than to not have that championship banner hanging. And so, you know, Michigan fans, like it might be tough days ahead in the next couple of years. It might be a little bit tough to kind of reestablish yourselves, but you've got the championship, you got the trophy in the trophy case, you have the memories from the season. And so I think that'll go a long way, kind of holding over the fan base and making sure the fan base stays bought in as this big transition is going on.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And you say 10-2 would not get it done. I think we're going to have to adjust our expectations on what 10-2 means in this new era of college football, because 10-2 with that schedule next year, I think they're absolutely in the college football playoff. And then, you know, you're talking about what's your matchup. Are you getting a home game in the first round? Are you traveling somewhere else? A home game in Michigan in December could be a big advantage for the Wolverines. So yeah. if they're going 10-2 on that schedule and they sneak in with the 7 or 8 seed, get that home game, that could be a big advantage for them to move on to the next round.
I don't want to play a home game, you know, around Christmas time in Ann Arbor. I don't want to
absolutely
do that.
That's
right.
I don't want to be the road team in that situation.
Talk about an Alabama or a Clemson or a Florida State going up to Ann Arbor or Columbus or any of these northern schools. That's one of the things I'm fascinated about with the new college football playoff.
What do you guys think about Harbaugh's legacy at Michigan? You know, Andy Staples made a comment on Twitter today where he said that those who believe that Harbaugh is going to the NFL because he doesn't want to deal with the system are basically believing a lie, right? Believing a fantasy. It's because he was so close to winning a Super Bowl. I commented back, I think both of those things can be true. And then he doubled down saying one of those is true. One of those absolutely is not true. Does that affect his legacy in your mind? That, you know, he's reached the summit. He won a championship. He's accomplished in his mind all he can at Michigan, and now it's on to greener pastures in the NFL.
I don't think that anything can tarnish his legacy at this point. I don't think if the cheating scandal comes out and it was all like 10 times worse than what we thought it was, I don't think that tarnishes it, because, you know, to blow this out of proportion and to put it in biblical terms, he's essentially Joshua leading them out of the wilderness and into the promised land. He brought Michigan back. He brought them all the way back. He put a trophy in the trophy case. He's, you know, son of Michigan, came back rocking the khakis, not wearing a shirt, hanging out on the football field. But, you know, like, he was just the whole way just a Michigan guy. He just fit with the fan base. You know, some people thought he's a little, you know, wacky, but the fan base
conquered Rome, took on the Italians.
Yeah, like he's looked a little wacky to an outsider, but like he was just a Michigan guy. And when you get to do that for your alma mater, for the team that you were there for them the whole time, now you get to come back as a coach and you get to, you know, coach your team, being able to lead them to a championship, there's no greater feeling. Right. There's nothing more that you can do. And so for Michigan fans, I don't think you're going to be able to find a one, no matter how many times he fell short prior to, you know, getting slacked by Georgia, you know, a couple years ago and coming up short against TCU. None of that matters at this point. Right. None of that's going to matter. And I don't think any amount of, you know, cheating scandal, we stole signs, something else happened, blah, 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 I don't think that's going to change anything for Michigan fans. And so if you're talking about his legacy to the college football world, they'll make up their mind later. Mm-hmm. But the only opinions that matter on this one belong to the Michigan fans, because who cares about, you know, that coach's legacy to anybody else? You know, when you talk about the grand scheme of things, it matters what their fan base thinks. And I think for Michigan fans, Harbaugh will go down as one of their favorite and possibly greatest coaches of all time.
Well, and when you think about it from a neutral standpoint, the NCAA is going to take way too long to get this all prosecuted in whatever system they're using for anybody to care at that point. When's the last time we've cared about an NCAA ruling and thought, oh, that tarnishes the legacy? I feel like as those take longer and longer and we get more and more removed, it just elevates the legacy. Look at Reggie Bush and the Ohio State guys that, you know, got Jim Tressel fired. Like, I know that's apples and oranges, but if we change the rules with videography or if a rule change happens in the future, there's just so many variables that could make that just a nothing burger.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're exactly right. I was thinking of both of those examples as far as like, okay, yeah. Did something get done that broke the rules? Yes, of course. Harbaugh. And if this sign stealing scandal, you know, we'll see what comes out about it, continues to come out about it, if the NCAA has new information, but like objectively wrong, right? Objectively breaking the rules. And still to your point, like if they take something away in 2030, nobody's going to care. Everybody is going to say, okay, you punished him. You made him sit out. He missed 6 games for various infringements, right? And now if you do something like take away a trophy or put an asterisk by it, like nobody cares.
Right.
Nobody cares. It's not the Houston Astros of a couple of years ago, right? Where it was just every single game, it had real instant impact. The NCAA hasn't been able to show that like the MLB could about the Astros. So for me, that's exactly my sentiment here. I'm not a Michigan fan. I'm not a Michigan hater, but I simply don't care.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And just real quick, yes or no, guys, it looks like Michigan's going to hire Sharon Moore to replace him. Mm-hmm. Yes or no, is that the right move?
It seems like it should be, right? I mean, ace recruiter, locker room guy, tough-nosed, is going to keep that Michigan culture in place. I mean, Garrett, what do you think?
I mean, look, for all intents and purposes, this guy's already beaten Ohio State, so, like, this is a great culture fit for him, right? For him, he's already been there. They know who he is. He's going to be able to keep the locker room intact. When you win a national championship, you want to bring that back. Your head coach is leaving, obviously. You're losing some players, but you're retaining a significant portion of that staff through keeping Sharon Moore and any assistants that he convinces to stay on to coach with him. You know, I think this is a great move. I think this is better than a lot of things you could have done. I know that a lot of people were talking Brian Kelly, and, you know, that's still, I guess, technically an option until the ink has been dry on the paper. But, you know, it's I don't think that's a very good move for Michigan. I don't think a lot of people at Michigan would like that as a move. And so I think, look, if there's not a better candidate out there somewhere that you can just make him say yes, and I you know, kind of struggle to think of how many candidates there really would be that you'd want to bring in and, right, and just say, you know, give him a blank check, let him do whatever he wants to do. I think, yeah, keep it in the program, right? Keep Sharon Moore and let him do his thing.
I'm right there with you guys. I think it would be a fantastic move. I'm usually not team promote from within, but in this case, you have one of the top assistants in the entire game. And when your options like that are go out and get somebody like Brian Kelly, or if you're not getting Brian Kelly, you're getting someone pretty unproven at that point, I would think, unless they can lure a really big fish. But I think that's the best possible move for them right now.
Nick Saban's going north. yeah, totally agree. I think Michigan is in as good a hands as they can be, given Harbaugh's departure. That's it for Michigan. On the other side, we flip sides in the rivalry. Trey, give me a Stanford, Steve.
Coming up next,
we talk Ohio State expectations for Ryan Day and more on the other side of this ad break. Welcome back. Segment two, we're talking Ohio State realistic or not expectations for Ryan Day and the Buckeyes. But first, Trey has got a word from our friends over at Baller.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about our friends at Baller Pickleball. We're so excited to be part of this partnership here with Baller Pickleball. It's the off season for football. That means we all have more time on our Saturdays and our weekends. Super Bowl's going to be over before you know it, guys. You need to fill your time with something. Why not join one of the fastest growing sports in the country? If you have not already, pickleball is taking over, and our friends at Baller are innovating to lead the way. Founders and fellow podcasters Jason and Jeremy set out to create a paddle that combined premium quality and elite performance with unbeatable affordability. And Baller was born to share that result. The original Baller Pro and brand new Baller Heat paddles can take your game to the next level or give you a big head start if you are just starting out. Plus, they're committing to donating more than 50% of their company profits, no matter how large their company grows. So you can shop their paddles. You can shop their moisture-wicking hats, which look awesome, their bags, their gear, all at ballerpickleball.com. That's B-A-L-L-R pickleball.com. And use our code 3TECHPOD for 10% off your whole purchase. That's 3TECHPOD for 10% off at ballerpickleball.com.
I saw them real fast. I saw them posting stuff this weekend.
Yeah.
They've got some pretty high-level athletes playing in tournaments all across the country using their stuff. So really excited to welcome them.
So, yeah, I got one this around Christmas time, and I love it. I can feel the difference from just your regular, you know, Joe Schmo paddle you get at Academy. It's a real big step up.
One of those Joe Schmo paddles that you've broken on a pickleball court.
I have, and yeah. We don't have to talk about that, but let's talk about Ohio State instead of raging on a pickleball court. Ohio State, guys, is this a hot or a valid take? They should be the current favorites to win the national championship next year. Right now, I looked up the odds during the break, and Georgia is currently the betting favorite, the odds on favorite at plus 300. Ohio State's right behind them at plus 500. Then you've got your Texas, your Alabamas, your Oregons of the world. to me, they've done a lot of really good things in the transfer portal. We talked about Kyle McCord. I don't think anybody in Columbus is losing sleep over losing him, rightly or wrongly. We've talked about him ad nauseum on the show, but you know, they go get Will Howard from Kansas State. They have all their weapons pretty much other than Marvin Harrison Jr. coming back. They go get some awesome names out of the transfer portal. They just basically raided Alabama's top players over the last week or so. And they have an entire defense that's coming back for year three under Jim Knowles. So I don't know. This is a team that's making a lot of moves. I think they're really upset as a program that their rivals got a national championship. I think Ryan Day is still coaching with a chip on his shoulder, recruiting with a chip on his shoulder. It seems like they've got a lot of positive momentum on the off-the-field stuff, getting their NIL collectives together. What do you guys think from y'all's perspective? How is Ohio State doing? Would you pick them right now to win next year's national championship?
I think this truly does feel like, to me, the year that Ohio State might finally be able to get it done. And I want to hear you guys talk about the quarterback, the offense, because that's what a lot of people have focused. But guys, I've really planted my flag on the defensive block for Jim Knowles riding for this defense. Guys, when Jim Knowles came over to Ohio State, this was a terrible Buckeyes defense. This was a Buckeyes defense that was struggling to get to the passer consistently. Their secondary was not very good outside of a key playmaker or two in the back end. But as a group, they were giving up a lot of yards. They were giving up points when it mattered most. And that's what Jim Knowles came in to fix. And I told you, I think at one of the very first episodes of this pod, I told you Jim Knowles is going to come in. He's going to revolutionize the defense. They're going to blitz galore, and that's what they've done. And the Buckeyes have gone from a defense that's a liability and one that holds them back from winning a championship to last year, it was the quarterback play. It was consistent offense against the biggest teams, against the best teams that held them back, or at least made you question, okay, can this team really get it done? The defense is absolutely championship caliber with Caleb Downs and company coming over. I look at Ohio State and go, if not this next year with all the weapons that they have and with a stone wall built up on defense, this may be their best chance.
Yeah, Mitch, you know, you make a great point on all of that. My take for Ohio State last year was kind of right and wrong. I said that I didn't see where Ohio State was really getting better last year because, you know, everyone was projecting that McCord was going to be this amazing quarterback. And I said, well, quarterback play's never really been their problem. And so I was wrong on that one because that was their problem this year.
And it was
really just McCord being the thing. But man, what a jump in the defense, right? They went from being, you know, a liability, like you were saying, and then it got a little bit better year one. But, you know, this last year, they were a top three defense behind, I think it was like any order of Michigan, Iowa, and them. There was some order in terms of scoring defense at the very top there by the end of the season. So when you talk to me about Ohio State and their defense, I'm saying, well, add Caleb Downs to that group and let's just lock and load, right? Let's keep it going. So I'm excited to see what that defense is going to look like. For me, I'm looking at this saying, okay, the step forward has to come from the quarterback spot, but also let's not ignore that you are losing one of the best receivers in college football in Maserati Marv, right? When you're losing him, you're going to take a step back in that room. I'm curious to see who steps up. They always seem stocked and loaded at the wide receiver position, and there's several talented guys that can still do that. I'm just curious to kind of see who steps up and becomes that alpha in that room, but none of that matters if they can't get quarterback play. I have a lot of reason to believe that they will. And that's where, you know, I'm going to kind of walk back some of the stuff I've said about Ohio State. It's a new season, right? It's the offseason. I can start to change my opinions on stuff. And I got to walk some stuff back because
clean slate.
Look, I'm a clean slate this thing, right? We're going to be objective here. Objectively speaking, and I have nothing against the Buckeyes personally, but objectively speaking, what they've done in the transfer portal is kind of terrifying, right? You were able to grab Will Howard, who I think is a seriously underrated quarterback. What he was able to do with Kansas State, slinging the football around, if they had better talent at the wide receiver position, I think Kansas State would have been a much more prolific offense these last couple of years. That aside, you're able to grab him. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Julian Sands came over from Alabama. He was there for, you know, a couple of weeks to move in and, you know, get settled in and then deciding, you know what, maybe I don't maybe I don't want to play for not Nick Saban. Good call, kid. You're going to go play at Ohio State. And if you don't back up Will Howard for a year, it means you're starting, right? It means that he was good enough to win the starting job. And he sure is talented enough. We've seen, you know, freshman quarterbacks do that before. If I was an Ohio State fan, I'd personally want Will Howard to be the guy right now because I'd want some experience coming back for me. But that's my own personal opinion. Maybe Ohio State fans disagree with me. Let me know in the comments. But, you know, there's that too. And then, oh, yeah, Quinshon Judkins came over. And even before that had happened, Henderson had become a, you know, relative favorite in the Heisman odds. So when you're coming back with a true double-headed, you know, beast in the backfield with Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson, plus the receivers that should be talented enough, plus better quarterback play, you're really starting to look, you know, pretty solid. And you're running out of reasons to say that Ohio State can't get it done. For me, Ohio State is the favorite at this point to win the whole thing. I don't see another roster out there that can rival what they have just in their starting, not even their two deep. But I don't see another roster that can rival this. And if I'm putting them up there and I'm looking at what they did defensively, if they can just keep that where it was and put a much better offensive product in the field, we could be talking one of the best college football teams of all time type of thing, just with the talent that they've accrued.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They're building a monster in Columbus. And yeah, they either had the quarterback play and didn't have the defense, or had the defense and didn't have the quarterback play this year. It seems like they're going to have both next year. Guys, the schedule is kind of a joke for the new Big Ten. I don't think they're going to find a much easier schedule going forward in the new Big Ten. And I no disrespect to some of these teams I'm about to name off, but only four road games. Two of those road games are really tricky. Penn State and Oregon. They do also travel to East Lansing. There's way too much, you know, way too much up in the air for the Spartans next year for me to call that a very difficult road game on paper right now. The only other road game is to Northwestern. I think there'll probably be more Ohio State fans in Evanston than Northwestern fans.
Well, let's hope it's not too windy.
You're right. If it's windy, all bets are off. That's a call back to a couple years ago if you're new to the show. The eight home games in Columbus. They don't play a Power 5 team out of conference, and they get Iowa. We'll see about their new offense. Nebraska, we'll see if they can put it all together. Purdue can be plucky. They've beaten the Buckeyes before, but it's been in West Lafayette. Indiana with a new coaching staff, and, of course, the Michigan game back at Ohio Stadium. To me, that's a schedule where if you're losing more than one, you're pretty disappointed.
I haven't seen it. Is there anything weird in the out-of-conference? Is there like a...
No,
like
it's Akron, Western Michigan, and Marshall. Power five.
Yeah, so look, at this point, if you're looking at the schedule and the talent they have, they don't only have like an easy schedule, but it also seems like it's setting up so that they should be growing through the year. I think finishing any lower than the two seed, just because like maybe there's some, you know, SEC bias with Georgia or something like that, finishing any lower than the two seed, I think feels like failure for Ohio State.
There's only two games that I project to be back-to-back ranked teams right now in January. Obviously a lot of stuff could change, but they play Iowa and at Oregon back to back. That's a really tough back to back, especially if Iowa beats them up a little bit.
Oh, and they had a bad time, you know, up in Eugene recently. That was in Columbus. No, they had a rough time with Oregon recently. Yeah.
And that is Ryan Day's only loss to not Michigan or a New Year's Six / college football playoff bowl. In his whole career, that Oregon game is his only other loss,
which is wild. Last thing on Iowa there. I know we talk about their defense and we're assuming that's going to be somewhat of a tough game. Guys, Iowa still doesn't have an offensive coordinator.
Right.
We don't know. We don't know if we're running the power eye, if we're going to air it out. Like nobody can tell you.
They're just waiting for one of these NFL teams to finish their season so they can officially announce it.
Speaking of offensive coordinators, one last thing on Ohio State. We didn't talk about it last week, but they did hire Bill O'Brien as the offensive coordinator, which is interesting to say the least. I think it does show that Ryan Day is wanting to be more of a CEO coach and hand over the reins to an experienced play caller. He's obviously called the plays before. I was texting with a good friend of the show, Joe from Longview, big Ohio State fan. I feel like that's a good move for him because I think in modern college football, there's just so much you have to juggle as a head coach, that if you're trying to call plays on offense or defense, it's just going to be dang near impossible for you to keep it going. We've seen that just taper off more and more every year, where the head coaches are giving up play calling duties just because there's too much else on their plate. I wonder what you guys think about that.
Totally, totally agree. We've forced head coaches to be CEOs. We've forced programs to hire general managers. It's too much. It's too much for any one coach to do.
Yeah, I like the move to switch to it, but man, to go back, and I can't let Ohio State fans completely off the hook. So let me take a quick little parting jab real quick. If you're wondering about a coach who might be on the hot seat and decides to give up play calling duties to an offensive mind of yesteryear, I'd like to point you to College Station and see how that worked last year for them. And just say, I hope that the results are better. Like, yeah, you know, Jimbo recruited just fine at A&M. Ryan Day is doing a good job recruiting up there. I think it's a different situation. I expect big things. We just finished saying that. I'm just saying, like, let's not think that bringing in some guy who, you know, maybe used to be a pretty good offensive mind but hasn't really proved it as of late is a foolproof thing. I'm a little nervous about that. I still think Ohio State's talented enough to overcome that, but I'd just be a little bit cautious about, you know, good Billy Brian, right? I'd be a little bit cautious about him.
We saw what Bryce Young looked like without Bill O'Brien as his coach, so it wasn't as good as it was at all.
Yeah.
Poor Carolina Panthers fans. Y'all are wallowing in misery right now. You know, we'll see. I'm not the biggest B.O.B. fan. I am the rapper, not the play caller, but I just think at a certain point, it's like, man, there's too much talent in Columbus for one average play caller to screw it all up, right?
You would think so, but, you know, I guess if you're Bill O'Brien, this B.O.B., you're still hoping that you got the magic in you, so. There you go.
Can't find a better way to close out a segment than that. That was perfect.
Coming up next, we dive into another segment of report cards. We're going to the Big 12. I'm going to run you down who passed, who failed, who excelled in the Big 12 conference right on the other side of this break. Welcome back. Final segment of today's podcast. We are diving into the Big 12, handing out some report cards. Guys, last week you got to the SEC and the ACC. Today, we planned for the Big 12 and the Big 10, but as I got more into this breakdown, I thought, you know what? There's so much here. I think we just have to focus on the Big 12. So Professor Mason made the call. We've just got one conference today, and I've got a grading curve that I want to see if you guys agree with. So as we get ready to hand out some of these grades here, we've got those who excelled, those who passed, and then those who ultimately failed. Starting at the top with the overachievers, this is Arizona, Kansas, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia. Now, you may look at that and go, Mitch, only two of those teams got A's. The other two in Kansas and Oklahoma State, if you're on the podcasting side, you've got graded as B's. First of all, I'd say raise your hand. Class is in session. Secondly, we are grading on a Big 12 curve here, and Kansas and Oklahoma State, to me, when you look at the recruiting, when you look at the defense for Oklahoma State, it was abysmal. You got an F, one of the worst defenses in the country, and yet you still made it to the Big 12 championship game, right? And so there has to be some grace. There's some extra credit here. Oklahoma State stayed late after the season to play in one more game. They beat Texas A&M, who was the walking MASH unit, right? So just because you didn't end with a 90.1, we're generous, right? We're going to dole out some of that extra credit. Now, guys, without a doubt, the best team coming into this next full season as a Big 12 member, despite Jed Fish leaving, might be the Arizona Wildcats. I would love to get into that with you.
I don't disagree with that, and it's one of the reasons why I was kind of surprised. I know the financial stuff is just an absolute mess. There's been more that came out about that this week at Arizona, and I don't blame Jed Fish for wanting to, you know, distance himself from that stuff, but he had the team to compete for a playoff spot out of the Big 12 next year. He had the team to compete for a Big 12 title. They got the big news that Jaden Delora was coming back, not going to Texas State as he originally announced. That's a big blow for the Bobcats, but you know, coming back to Arizona, it seems like is huge for them. They had the team and they showed it on the field this year, just a really hard-nosed football team, and they're keeping most of it together, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, McMillan coming back is absolutely massive, right? Folks thought they might walk out the door, go right up the coast to Washington. But Garrett, you keep your X factors on the offense.
Yeah, it's a great roster. My concern is, what does it look like post Jed Fish, right? The financials are so bad. You drove a coach out, which, you know, there might have been some interviews he had also taken. I know he was kind of looking around a little bit, but that makes me wonder, like, what does he know? What did he kind of know before all this came out? Like, is there stuff going on behind the scenes that we're not privy to quite yet? I'm curious to see how all that works out. For me personally, I look at this and I say they might be your best team in the Big 12 next year, almost by default. With so much movement happening in college football and all of the realignment that's also gone with a lot of guys leaving the conference. And so a couple other teams on this list, you know, look at Kansas. You're losing your star quarterback. He hit the portal recently, and I don't know if he's going to come back or if he's whatever, but you could be looking at this as an option for, you know, several of these teams. You could be looking up and down and saying, well, I don't know what to expect out of this next team anyways. So for me, when I'm looking at Arizona, I'm saying, well, at least Arizona has some stud players, some continuity on that offensive side. They've certainly played a great game against Oklahoma, who, you know, just did pretty well in that conference this year. So you're thinking, okay, well, just year-to-year comparisons, Arizona should be good. And so I'm looking at Arizona, I'm saying, yeah, you got a bunch going for you. You just really got to keep it up post-Jed Fish. And if you can keep it up, I think you can start to run the conference a little bit. And if you show that you have that direct path to the playoff and you've got some talent on the roster, people will be attracted to that. You can, you know, kind of crush it in the portal if you prove you have a path to the playoff, even up to one of those top four seeds.
I totally agree. I think there's a power vacuum at the top of the Big 12 that Arizona could step in if the athletic department really kind of stays in place around them, right? They've built up something that's worth fighting for. Now they just simply have to have enough money to keep the lights on, but I really do like the Wildcats' chances. Just one clarifying note, Jalen Daniels at Kansas returned. So Kansas has their quarterback.
Is he coming back?
Yes, yeah, Jalen Daniels is coming back. Kansas State.
I thought that I had seen that he hit the portal. He might have came back out, or that might have been a quick in and out type of thing.
No, yeah, he's definitely back. He'll play one more year and then go to the
Well, that's good.
He announced in the season, I think, that he was going to come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Kansas, we'll see what Kansas can do under Lance Leipold. It seems like they dodged a couple bullets, keeping Leipold there on campus as well. One last topic here before we jump to the passing grades. We got to give a round of applause to West Virginia.
Yes, and
a heartfelt apology for doubting you 2 years in a row. Listen, as far as I'm concerned, Mountaineers fans, the score is 1-1, right? We were heckled. For our reservations, shall we say, with Neil Brown and company in year one of the podcast, we were right. We were heckled for year two and our reservations and saying Neil Brown would be fired. And obviously West Virginia far exceeded expectations. So we apologize for that.
Let the West Virginia fan that had confidence in Neil Brown cast the first stone. I'm not even going to like backtrack on that. We were right to question them this year, but he pulled it, you know, somewhere out of it. Let the West Virginia fan that didn't want to fire Neil Brown coming into this year cast the first stone.
That's very fair. Very fair. Guys, let's move on to the passing grades. Now, this is a little bit of a meatier group, as you would expect, right? A lot of different grades that we can give here, B's, C's, D's, all passing grades in Professor Mason's Big 12 class. And for those on the podcast, we've got Cincinnati, Colorado, Iowa State, Kansas State, Texas Tech, UCF, and Utah. For me, and I'm doing this partly because it's been kind to our channel, the letter grades for the Colorado Buffaloes, gentlemen, from left to right, offense, we gave them a D. Now, just a peek in behind the grading scale here in my classroom. Each letter grade represented an increment of 25 teams. So if you had an A for offense, you were in the top 25 teams in offense, et cetera, right? So use that for a frame of reference before you come at us in our comments and say Colorado did amazing things. Colorado finished with a D in offense, We got an F in defense. Didn't even show up for class most days. We did get a B in recruiting, kind of like lunch or PE. Really, really exhibited some interest there. But then D on field results for overall a D letter grade. Now, you could make an argument that if you don't show up to class, if you're, you know, half team at best most weeks, that you shouldn't get a passing grade. But guys, we pegged Colorado as a 4-8 team from the jump. And because that was such a grind for them to get there from a 1-win season the year previous, we've been very open with our praise of Deion, saying, hey, get rid of all the headlines, get rid of all the hype, get rid of the NIL deals and the flashy watches, and boil it down to what we did on the field. And there was legitimate progress. Is that a fair ranking for the Colorado Buffaloes?
It's really fair. And I think the problem is, if you ask Colorado fans going into the season, like what their expectations were versus where they are now, most Colorado fans would be earning F for this because they all thought, you know, 100% guaranteed, we're going to hit a bowl game, might even challenge for the conference. And one of the first things we said when they hired Deion was, he's probably going to help turn this thing around, but it's going to take some time. You don't take a 1-win team and then immediately turn them into a conference contender, especially with as many good teams as there were in the Pac-12 last year. We knew that. We had no issue with that. Colorado fans had an issue with that. And so we had plenty of angry Colorado fans, you know, questioning why we would ever question the greatness of Deion Sanders. And I said, look, I got no hate for Deion Sanders. You know, I like him as a guy. I think he's a cool guy. I think he gets overblown, and so it can be hard to tolerate him. But, you know, he's a good coach. He's going to do a good job with Colorado. You just got to give him some time, yeah. Right? And now that he's switching over to the Big 12 and, you know, Pac-12's done, and you look around, kind of like what I was just saying previously for Arizona's transition, Colorado also gets some favorable transition where you look around this Big 12 conference and you say, who's the big dog, right? Who's the alpha? There's plenty of reasons to doubt plenty of different teams in this conference. And so, you know, for Colorado going into next year, there's some reasons to be excited. But this year, it wasn't it, right? It wasn't the big season. It was a good step in the right direction, but your defense was not very good. You lost some games you really probably shouldn't have. You won a couple games you shouldn't have either. So congratulations, right? You came out the gates. You beat TCU. TCU's probably a better team than them this year, but you beat them. Good job. Congratulations. And so, you know, for me, I look at Colorado and I say, look, at the end of the day, they did fine. They kind of barely passed, but they show promise, right? Yeah. This was a cellar dweller that all of a sudden looks like they could maybe compete in their new conference.
Yeah, they came out spicy and they gave their fans something to care about for the first time in quite a while. And, you know, I wonder how differently we're viewing this season at Colorado if they don't blow the game against Stanford and you just flip one of their one possession losses, right? Like they lost by one possession to USC, to Oregon State, to Arizona, and to Utah. Those are four really good teams, right? And then you don't blow the game against Stanford, you flip one of those, you're in a bowl game. I think we're viewing this Colorado season much, much differently, and we're having a different conversation about Deion Sanders. But yeah, I think they're one of those teams that could fill the power vacuum in the Big 12. They still have a lot of recruiting hype. And listen, a lot of that media hype that Deion Sanders gets, 90% of that is not his fault. That's just the media looking for like a big story that's going to get a lot of clicks. I don't blame him for that. I know he feeds into it a lot, and I know it's part of his recruiting pitch, but he can't help that. So I don't really dislike him for that. But it's an uphill battle at a place like Colorado. It's not a lot of people in the past have been able to win there. I know they had a lot of success in the 80s and 90s, but, you know, whole history, it's been a very difficult place to win. So he's going to have to keep grinding.
Do have to raise my hand and admit an error in the grading scale. I was getting ready to say I'm shocked that Cincinnati earned an A in offense. I would have thought it would have been the other way around.
I was going to call that out on our
33rd in offense, which is still way higher than I expected during the preseason. In fact, I said if the offense, when we did the Big 12 breakdown, I said if the offense gives you anything, you're a bowl-bound team. Expecting the defense to be their calling card, that was where they had all the talent. They got a D in defense. They were one of the worst teams in the country defensively, but 33rd in offense. So should have been a B. That's my error. Trey, as you look down this slate, pick one of the other teams. You know, maybe it's Kansas State getting an A plus in offense, but you know, just coming up a little shy, sputtering towards the end of the season. Maybe you have something you want to comment on, you know, on the Red Raiders, a team that you were very, very high on. Take this where you would like.
Texas Tech season just got off the rails before it could even start, man. I don't know why they scheduled that game in Laramie, Wyoming, week one, but they did, and it kind of threw their season off the rails, and the rest is history. But, you know, credit to Joey Mack for still getting to a bowl game when nothing was going right and winning that bowl game against Cal. So he salvaged the season pretty well. It wasn't the high expectations that people like me hoped, but, you know, credit to him for salvaging that season. Mitch, I got to take umbrage with you giving my Iowa State Cyclones a D for their 7-6 season, because I seem to remember you guys clowning me for saying that a bowl game was possible for the Clones, and yet they made the bowl game. They had some margin for error there. They went 7-5 in the regular season. And they lost their starting quarterback and another offensive weapon before the year started because of gambling issues. And yet they still made it to bowl season. How is that a D?
Trey, that sounds great and all, but I plead the fifth.
I had forgotten about that. You know, you make a good point. You know, let's have you stay after class, and we can, you know, we can discuss about maybe raising that grade. I think, you know, I think upon further review, a C, I think a C would be fair. You know, we can bump up a letter grade, but you know, hey, that's why you ask, right? There's no harm in asking.
That's why you send me.
That is the number one like lesson learned from the teaching profession now, is if someone just complains about the grade, you'll probably bump them to a C.
just ask nicely.
You're putting in some effort.
That's, you know, 7-6 on the season. Yeah, that's fine. We can give them a C. We can bump them up into the 70s.
6-3 in the Big 12. That was a good. I know they lost to Ohio, but.
And you said, you called that they were about to go on some sort of run. Garrett and I laughed at you, and then there they are playing in the postseason. So kudos, yep. Kudos to the Hawkeyes. UCF is the other really interesting team. I think Utah. I don't know that we fully know what they were capable of. You know, you've got Cam Rising coming back for his 12th season of football this next year. So I'm really curious to see what a healthy Utes team is like. But for UCF, they're going to go from John Reese Plumlee to KJ Jefferson. Very mixed bag of results across the board. Elite offense, terrible defense. And the results were mixed, as you would expect. Just kind of very quickly, overview for UCF going into this next season. Are you confident with Jefferson at the helm? Where do they fit in this new Big 12?
I mentioned this last week. I think Jefferson is the perfect quarterback for this offense. I think he's going to put up a lot of numbers, be really fun to watch. I don't know that that's going to mean more wins for UCF, because I don't know that they've done enough to address the defense, and there's going to be a lot of teams that can score points on them, but I don't think KJ Jefferson will be the reason that they don't improve. I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, they're going from a quarterback who's a run-first, dual-threat quarterback with good arm talent to a quarterback who's a run-first quarterback and has good arm talent. That's just kind of where they're going. So they're just kind of switching it. The only difference is you're probably losing a little bit of speed but gaining more physicality. So, you know, I guess that's maybe nice and could help you in the red zone or something. Maybe, you know, punch in a couple drives, finish with some more points. But yeah, I think it's the defense for UCF. There's going to be a lot to figure out. And, you know, there's too much incompleteness across the Big 12 right now. Kind of like I've said, there's too many teams with too many question marks for me right now to be able to say, oh, they'll definitely compete more next year because of it. I mean, you wouldn't shock me to watch KJ Jefferson just torch the Big 12. That wouldn't necessarily surprise me to watch him go through and lead a – I mean, they're, what, eighth in offense? If they go get a top five offense, that's not necessarily shocking to me. I just – you know, I'd need to see where the wins come from, right? I need to see where those wins are going to be. I want to look at the schedule and figure out what these other teams are doing too, because it's going to be a totally new conference next year.
It absolutely is. I cannot wait to see the new pecking order in the Big 12. That is going to be one of the more fascinating storylines, I think, all year long. Quickly, let's move on to to those that need some remedial training, guys.
Yeah, crack my knuckles for this next group because I'm gonna.
Yeah, this is this is not a group you want to be a part of. And guys, not very often that we've seen the national runner-up descend to absolute poverty the next season. Although I guess LSU did it in 2020. That was a COVID season. Weird things happen. But TCU is a part of this group that for those on the YouTube side, these are not the overachievers. These are those that flunked class.
See on the graphic there, forgot to switch overachievers to failures. Maybe I should have put it in quotes.
All right, you can start.
Read it sarcastically. Read it
Exactly. Right? Exactly. For the YouTube clip that's inevitably coming, you can start it right here. TCU, a great offense, top 25 offense. They had 11th is what they finished in total offense, but 103rd in defense. They ultimately finished 5-7. They have a really good recruiting class coming in this next season. So that's why they don't earn an outright F in this class. But Trey, to me, it felt kind of like, well, you had all the talent and then you just didn't study for the test. Like you showed up and you winged it and it just didn't work out. And now you got to repeat third grade. Like we got to run it back. I'm actually a little bit higher on TCU's chances for this next season in the Big 12, but there's no doubt, like you can't sugarcoat it. 2023 was as rude an awakening for TCU fans that thought that they were building all this momentum.
It's what 2022 probably should have been for TCU, right? Like the magic clearly ran out. They lost a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. People were looking at the offensive side of the ball, you know, losing, you know, Max Duggan and Quinshon Judkins.
Johnson. Quentin Johnson.
Thank you. Quinshon Johnson. Judkins is the running back. But, you know, losing guys like that, and no one was really looking at the defensive talent that they were losing. And it showed on the field, giving up in their FBS games, in their losses, excuse me, they gave up 45. 24, 27, 41, 35, and 29, and 69 points. Not nice on that last one, but it was a defensive just, you know, I don't even know the word for it. It was putrid on that side of the ball. And I don't know what the pulse of the fan base is on Coach Dykes, but I'm going to lump it in with another team we're going to talk about here in a second with Baylor and Coach Dave Aranda. It's my old mantra. One good year does not a good coach make. And so we got to talk. If he doesn't bounce back next year, we got to have a serious conversation about Dykes. Aranda's already on the hot seat. I think he's gone if they have another bad year this year, but you can't just, you know, have confidence in your coach off of one good year. You got to see more than that before you go crazy off the deep end for him.
Well, let's go into Baylor because they were a team, you know, BYU and Arizona State, I don't know that we really had any true expectations for them last year, and they performed kind of as such. The offense for BYU did not save them, 121st in total offense. But Trey, take it to Baylor, and Garrett, I want you to weigh in on this as well. They thought Aranda was the guy after one really good season, and it looked great. It looked amazing when Dave Aranda came in, and they had a plucky offense. And they got to the Big 12 championship game and they won it. And their defense stood on its head and helped them claim that championship. And since then, it's been a stock arrow pointing straight down. The recruiting has suffered. The offense has been virtually non-existent. You let your best playmaker, maybe in Kyren Drones, transfer out the door to Virginia Tech. I'm having a really hard time kind of finding any positives about the Bears program right now.
Well, and the guy that you put, you know, all your eggs in his basket, Blake Shapen, is also heading out the door to Mississippi State, right? So I don't know. Like, I haven't looked at their schedule for next year, but Baylor has a lot of the tools that you need to be a winning program. We've seen them with the right coach, and even with this coach, get a lot of positive results, but this year was as bad as it's been on the Brazos in a really, really long time. And it's hard to have a lot of optimism for me with the way that they're recruiting, the way I know that we gave them a B for finishing 35th, but like, I think when you combine that with their portal losses, when you look at a couple other teams in the state and what they're doing, what Tech's doing, what TCU's doing, what, you know, Utah and Arizona are doing on the recruiting front as well, that just doesn't really it's not going to cut it, I don't think, to win a Big 12 championship.
No, it certainly won't. And that's kind of the hard part, is I think Aranda's a really good football mind. I think he really gets the game and is a good X's and O's coach, but his roster management has not been good, to say the least. And just before, you know, we get called haters of the Baylor program, you know, I'll, you know, put my hand up. My wife's a Baylor grad. I got no ill will towards the Bears, but like, man, it's just, it's almost impossible to turn on their games because they're just awful to watch. Like, they're really not fun to watch. And, you know, they don't score a lot of points. There's nothing particularly dynamic about their offense. Everything that was dynamic about their offense is gone. And so you're really hoping there's some fresh blood in there. Maybe, you know, a second transfer portal window can help them. And, you know, maybe they can nail that. But there's nothing that we've seen so far that says that'll be the case. So they got to get some stuff turned around quick, because the other half of this is, and this is something that's maybe a little bit more behind the scenes for Baylor, but there's a lot of excitement in other places on that campus. Their basketball team has been really good for the last several years. They're going to continue to be a dominant force. They just, you know, open up a new arena. It's a little bit smaller, but it's, you know, real nice. And so there's a lot of focus on other places on their campus right now. And it's already kind of a small fan base, small alumni base. It's a private school, right? It's a little bit smaller. And so when you think about where Baylor goes from here, kind of what they're looking to do, they really need to find some way to turn this thing around and quick, to get this fan base excited, because without the fan base being excited, there's not going to be buy-in. You're not going to be able to win on the NIL front, which means you're not going to win in the transfer portal. And if you're not winning in the transfer portal, I don't think you're winning on the football field either.
But to your point, there's just no juice in the fan base twice.
Yeah.
Two home games towards the end of the season, I drove by McLean on my way back from calling high school football. And both times at the half, Baylor's, it's like school's letting out. Everyone's headed to the parking lot. Everyone's going home at the break. Nobody's even staying for the third quarter, right? It's a fan base that just has no faith, no juice. There's not much excitement. The defense was putrid this last season. At least under Aranda, what you've been able to hang your hat on is a great defense, right? Even if the offense maybe needs some work, is sluggish, they were 113th in the country in total defense. That is just not going to get it done, even in a conference that doesn't play a lot of defense historically. That is so not what Dave Aranda is supposed to be bringing, what Baylor football typically has been about. And so I'm very, very concerned about the Baylor Bears. Any other closing thoughts here on those teams that had a rough 2023 before we get out of here?
Who do you guys think is more likely to take a step forward next year, Houston or BYU?
Ooh.
Houston.
Stain. Plead the fifth.
I'm going to say Houston.
I think I agree with that, but man, I just don't know. Neither of them give you really a lot of reason for optimism, right? I mean, there's not a lot I'm looking at saying like, oh, these teams are going to, you know, really take a step forward because of this. Like, I don't really like where either of the programs are right now.
I literally forgot Houston was a Power 5 program at one point last year. Trey called me out on our betting segment because I grouped them in with a group of five parlay.
Yeah, I mean, I think long-term, Houston's better set up from a program standpoint, it seems like, to have success than BYU. Maybe they're just closer to talent, maybe getting a right coach that can invigorate that fan base a little bit. You talk about other programs that have more distractions from their basketball team, and that's where the money's flowing right now. But I think long-term, it seems like Houston might be better set up, but I don't know. Like, I still like what BYU has, a really good culture. And you look at their, you know, getting an F in offense and an F in defense on our show doc, 121st in offense, 109th in defense. And they still found a way to win five games and be competitive in their losses. Like, that's good culture, even if you're not actually getting the results on the field.
Well, and one more note on BYU is, with this new conference realignment, we're getting BYU-Utah in the same conference now, and that's something to be excited about. This is a game I would like to see played every year at the end of the year and watch a rivalry game in a cold Utah environment type of thing. That'd be a lot of fun.
That's absolutely the holy war, isn't it? Utah-BYU? So. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You need to see that. Need to see that with some regularity. Well, let us know right in who you thought was the overachiever in the Big 12. Who were you okay with passing? Who would you like to have seen in that group? And then bring on the takes. If you've got hot takes with the failures, bring them on. You know where to find us at 3TechPod on Instagram, on Twitter, and on YouTube. Appreciate you guys riding with us for another episode. We'll be back next Monday morning. And of course, you can find us every single day of the week over on our social media platforms as well. For Trey Reeves and Garrett Turney, I'm Mitch Mason. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Gracious, how about that?